William Shakespeare is dead. Everyone can agree on that and has for more than 400 years. But a guy who leaves such a big and influential body of work not only keeps attention over time, but also keeps alive questions about who he really was. There are the Stratfordians, who think the story is simple and he was William Shakespeare from Stratford-upon-Avon, and the Oxfordians, who think the name was an alias for Edward de Vere, the 17th Earl of Oxford. The Oxfordians' cause is advanced by a documentary film out last year called Nothing is Truer Than the Truth. It screens in Ashland this afternoon. Here's a clip.
Edward de Vere was an outstanding, ingenious, and sometimes abrasive Elizabethan Renaissance man. Scholar, spendthrift, courtier, wit, adventurer, patron, prolific ghostwriter, de Vere encompassed the character traits of many Shakespearean icons, among them Hamlet, Romeo, Othello, Falstaff, and King Lear.
And Edward de Vere, the Earl of Oxford, becomes a movie star himself in Cheryl Egan Donovan's film Nothing is Truer Than the Truth. Cheryl is producer, writer, and director of the film, which screens this afternoon at 1 at the Meese Auditorium on the Southern Oregon University campus in Ashland. Cheryl, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Hi, thanks so much for inviting me, Jeff. I'm thrilled to be here back in Ashland, where a lot of the work on the film began when I came here to my first Shakespeare authorship conference to talk with the author of a book, Shakespeare by Another Name, Mark Anderson, about optioning his book. So that's where the journey began. And then I filmed quite a few people here at that conference with some students from Southern Oregon University assisting. And it's been a great journey since then to when it was released just this year, actually.
So there was some shooting in Ashland.
Yes, quite a bit.
I thought I recognized some
yes.
of the scenes in Ashland. Okay.
It's such a beautiful town.
Had you already been attuned to the whole Oxfordian versus Stratfordian controversy before this?
I studied Shakespeare as a British Lit major, you know, in high school, and then as an undergrad, I did an independent study on androgyny in Shakespeare's plays. But it wasn't until I was taking a history class at Harvard University in 1997 that I heard that there was an authorship question. I had never heard of it. And so I was introduced to it in a history class. I read J. Thomas Loney's book, Shakespeare Identified, and then I read Joseph Sobrand's book, Alias Shakespeare. And I was quite convinced after looking at the poetry, the early poetry of Edward de Vere, and the idea about bisexuality that Sobrand mentions, that this was the actual writer of the work.
Give us a broader context, though. I mean, do we know less about and I'm going to use quote hands here for our listeners, do we know less about William Shakespeare than other writers of his time, for example?
Yes. Diana Price's book is an excellent comparison on that. There's very little information about Shakespeare, William Shakespeare of Stratford, as a writer. He didn't own any books. We don't know that he actually could read or write. We have several signatures of his, but we know very little about him except that he was involved in the theater, that he did go to London, and that's about it. So no evidence that he actually wrote anything.
You mentioned bisexuality. This appears to be one of the major issues about why he would keep an alias rather than just put his own work out there under his own name.
That's something that I feel strongly about. Not everyone agrees with that idea, but I think if you look at the plays, you find an author who was clearly interested in sexuality, in gender identity. All of the plays kind of play with gender identity, and the poetry, especially the sonnets, I think, are, again, controversial because it's clearly, as Derek Jacobi says in the film, love poems from one man to another. There are also love poems from a man to a woman, or, you know, there's a mistress. So there seems to be the implied bisexuality in the sonnets.
Is there also another reason for somebody wanting to stay anonymous at a time when to fall out of court favor could be a bit of a deal?
Yes, there are many reasons that people use pseudonyms, and what Shakespeare was writing was very politically charged. He seemed to get away with doing quite a bit of satire and criticism of the existing government, which is interesting in and of itself. But there are many reasons why writers use pseudonyms. But I have spoken on the fact that oftentimes writers do use pseudonyms because of their sexual preference. They don't want their family to know. There are many examples of that.
Is there much work extant under the name of Edward de Vere, under the Earl of Oxford, 17th Earl of Oxford, not the 16th, not the 18th, 17th?
There is. There are his poems, which, as I said, were really influential for me. I had written a little bit of poetry as a younger person, and it it clearly is the voice of the emerging poet. I think a poet doesn't start writing great stuff. That's part of being a writer. Your work develops and you develop a voice over time. There are direct parallels. There are two new books coming out on that. One of the people featured in the film, Roger Strittmatter, is editing two volumes of Edward de Vere's poems, which have kind of been forgotten. But at the time that they were written, they were considered very innovative. He writes in the six-line stanza, which is in his early poetry. It's called Juvenalia because it was written when he was quite young, but it also appears in Venus and Adonis. So there are direct parallels in the form, the content, some of the exact same words in the poetry. And then there are his letters, which Derek Jacobi, again, did a fantastic reading of the letters of Edward de Vere, which we find some of the same themes, beautifully written letters. We don't have letters from William Shakespeare of Stratford.
Derek Jacobi, Mark Rylance, and a couple of other names that people will recognize in the film. It is called Nothing is Truer Than Truth. It is the creation of Cheryl Egan Donovan, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, producer, writer, director. You can join the conversation on the Exchange. Take a side. Are you an Oxfordian or a Stratfordian? At 40, and if so, why? 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And I want to introduce another clip from Nothing is Truer Than the Truth.
The question itself has a great deal of appeal to lawyers, physicians, scientists. People who come from fact-based backgrounds will give you the time of day and say, what's your evidence?
Which gives us a chance to introduce another guest. Earl Showerman is a local Shakespeare scholar in the Ashland area and a retired emergency room physician. So you yourself are a scientist. Well, how would this appeal to you?
Very much so, Jeffrey. I think that you have to have a natural skepticism about the traditional attribution when you examine the literary evidence for the traditional view of who Shakespeare was and where he came from. So I think that's where I came from as an emergency physician. And emergency medicine has a lot of qualities in its culture that are like the culture of drama. And when I moved here in the early 70s, I started attending class shows at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and got immediately hooked into that. So it combines my love of Shakespeare and the experience of seeing it on the stage with the scientist's view of what is actually truthful about the story that we've been fed.
Does the issue of authorship in any way change for either of you or for anybody else you've encountered the appreciation of the works themselves? I mean, do people feel differently about the content based on who they think the creator was?
I think actors and students and scholars would agree that it really opens up the world when you know more about the parallels in De Vere's life and the themes that he's treating in the plays. I say to my students often, I teach English literature and film, that we wouldn't say it's not important to know about Tennessee Williams' life or Eugene O'Neill's life when we look at the work. And so I think the same is true for Shakespeare, and it really, really enhances your understanding of the plays to know a little bit more about the author.
It seems often when someone dies, the truth about them comes out. A person steps forward or some papers are unearthed or somebody goes, hey, I have these letters. You know, any one of those things can happen, which would indicate, oh, well, here, case in point, Senator Strom Thurmond. Oh, wow, he had a black child. You know, things like this that you find out after a person has died. So this didn't apparently happen with Edward de Vere, did it?
Well, one of the theories is that, again, because the sonnets seem to be talking about the Earl of Southampton, and the two long poems are dedicated to the Earl of Southampton, he was still alive and may have not wanted that released. Edward de Vere's daughters, we think, were influential in publishing the first folio, and it seems that the family still wanted to keep that relationship under wraps, as it were. That is one theory about why the pseudonym persisted after De Vere's death.
So was there a person who, I mean, you mentioned that there's a signature of William Shakespeare. There are pictures that purport to be William Shakespeare, but it sounds like a very sketchy route back to any other documentation of the existence, ownership, you know, whatever.
Well, he was a real person who lived in Stratford-upon-Avon and who probably was known to Edward de Vere. England was a relatively small country, and people knew one another. There's another researcher, Nina Green, who's done great research on all the wills of people at the time. And so it's quite likely that they were aware of one another. There are connections through the publisher, Richard Field, and many connections through the families. So he was a real person, and what I don't know the answer to is what was his role in the publishing of the plays? Did he have anything to do with the pseudonym or not? Those are the things I don't know the answer to, so they're not in my film.
One of our guests wants you to comment on the Christopher Marlowe theory and how the theory of De Vere authorship dovetails or disposes of the Marlowe theory.
That's a great question. Marlowe is a really interesting writer and one that many people felt could have been Shakespeare because he was what we would consider today openly gay. He was writing about homosexual subjects in his work much more explicitly than Shakespeare ever did. And he's a great character. You know, there's this whole mystery about his death, you know, that he was stabbed in a barroom brawl and perhaps he faked his death and went to Italy. You know, so it's a great story, very compelling. But I feel that his writing is significantly different than Shakespeare's. I don't feel that there's a parallel there like there is with Edward de Vere.
So. Cheryl, I'm glad you brought up Italy because I forgot to ask up to this point about how Italy appears to be a key to the Oxford authorship question brought up very early in your film.
Yes, well, when I was looking for a way to tell the film, the story of De Vere's life and frame the film, I decided to focus on that year and a half when he left London and traveled throughout Europe and from his home base in Venice, in Italy, because I felt like that was key to his becoming Shakespeare. There he had the experiences, he met the playwrights, he saw the artwork and met the artists and saw the Commedia dell'arte and read the great plays. And so that for me, that was a critical year in his life. We went to Italy to the same places that De Vere had visited. They're still there and it was really an amazing trip. But the plays that are set in Italy are so specific. The places that he talks about are very specific, whether it's the church, St. Peter's Church in Verona, or the Mantua, the statue of the Giulio Romano statue, the Appartamento di Troia in Mantua. So we went to all those places to see the exact same things that De Vere did and how those were incorporated into Shakespeare's plays.
And there are Italian, untranslated Italian sources in the canon. Ser Giovanni's Il Pecoroni is a source of Merchant of Venice, Ariosto and Bandello sources for Much Ado About Nothing. These were untranslated sources, and we know that that De Vere was fluent in Italian and Latin and French, so we know that he was certainly capable of getting a hold of those kind of sources that mysteriously ended up in England, but they were untranslated and unpublished in England at that time.
Mm, all right, a very accomplished person in many ways. We're talking about Earl Edward de Vere, the 17th Earl of Oxford, and the question about whether he was, in fact, the person we've come to know as William Shakespeare. Earl Showerman, a Shakespeare scholar, retired ER physician, bringing to town Cheryl Egan Donovan, who is the creator of the documentary Nothing is Truer Than the Truth. We are on the Jefferson Exchange with them, and so is Mark in Grants Pass. Welcome.
Good morning. I was wondering if you guys had ever heard of the theory that Sir Francis Bacon may have been Shakespeare. I can remember back in 1984 going to San Diego City College, and one of our professors, Dr. Keating, used to take us up to see several of the plays at the Globe Theater. And it was one of her conjectures that some, especially in Midsummer Night's Dream, there's too many insider jokes for the writer of the play not to have been a part of the court. The royal court at the time.
All right. Thanks for that, Mark.
Yes, Bacon was a very popular candidate for many years because he was part of that circle of poets who, again, probably would be what we'd identify as bisexual today. So he was definitely a group of those insiders. And I think his work is a little bit different, not so many parallels to Shakespeare. But what I think this points out that people were looking for someone else. There have been questions about who wrote Shakespeare. Was it a pseudonym for many, many years, starting with the early, you know, publication of the plays? People often say this is a recent phenomenon. And there's another new book that Roger Strittmatter is working on that talks about allusions to Shakespeare. From the time that the plays, as I said, were first being published and produced. So people have thought there's just something not right about the person from Stratford, and who else might it have been? So Bacon is someone that was a candidate.
I'm very glad that Mark brought up Midsummer Night's Dream because the romance between Bottom and Titania in the love potion is an obvious allegory of Queen Elizabeth's relationship with the Duke of Alençon and her ambassador, Jean Simier. which several scholars have noted. So the question of whether Shakespeare could have mocked the queen in some monstrous relationship with a metamorphosed ass is really something to think about. How did Shakespeare get away with that? That play was published in 1598, three years before Elizabeth passed away. So the poet obviously had poetic license in this regard. And I think if you take a close look at that play, you'll see a remarkable satiric allegory on the queen and her romancing this French duke.
Earl Showerman, you're heavily involved with the Shakespeare Oxford Fellowship. Tell us what that is.
Shakespeare Oxford Fellowship is a nonprofit educational organization, and we've been producing conferences annually for quite a few years. We've had conferences in Ashland on three occasions in the past. In the summer, we're having a seminar at the Hannon Library from July 22nd through the 25th. But we publish a journal, newsletters, promote research in these areas, and now even have a podcast, and Don't Quill the Messenger, which has started up this year. So we're doing whatever we can in this regard to promote.
Just, Don't Quill the Messenger.
Really Don't Quill
that.
The Messenger, yes. Cheryl, incidentally, was interviewed several weeks ago and posted online, and so you could learn more about the creation of her film on there, but I would encourage anybody in the region to come. It's a free screening this afternoon at Meese Auditorium at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, and it's free. Okay, good to know. Meese Auditorium on the Southern Oregon University campus in the Art Building. Cheryl, just a couple of seconds left. I mean, mm-hmm. Is there any other last bit of information that might turn the tide on this, or has every attic in England been ransacked by this point?
Well, we do have people still doing research. There are people doing research in Italy right now, looking for evidence of De Vere's trip there, documentation of that. People are looking for evidence, you know, more works by him. But, you know, right now in the Folger Library in Washington, D.C. is the copy of the Geneva Bible that De Vere owned with his annotations in it, and that's probably the closest thing we have to a smoking gun, as it were. It seems to be, you know, direct evidence that the plays that, you know, the references to the Bible in the plays and in the poems can be connected to De Vere's actual annotations in that copy, so...
Cheryl Egan Donovan making the case for Edward De Vere, the Earl of Oxford, as the person we know as William Shakespeare in the film Nothing is Truer Than the Truth on the aptly named Controversy Films. Be airing a screening this afternoon at 1 o'clock at the Meese Auditorium on the Southern Oregon University campus for free. Brought to town with by Earl Showerman, local Shakespeare scholar, retired ER physician. Thank you both for joining us on the
Thank
Jefferson
you
Exchange.
So much.
Earl, hope to see you in July when you have your gathering.